Next off is Tina Turner at Prudential Center at 7:30 p.m.
Then at the Blender Theater at the Gramercy around 7 p.m., we have Chronic Future, Medictroid, and Hypercrush.
Last on the list is MC Crist and the Lost Locker Combo at the Knitting Factory at 7.
Alright, so if you're in a band and you want to be heard, hit us up with your contact info and upcoming shows at Scene.
That's S-C-E-N-E at WUSB-FM. Have a good night.
Yeah, take it easy.
And it's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock, time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Live in the studio this night. Actually, it's an abbreviated show again tonight because we have another basketball game coming up at 6:45. So much fun last week, we decided to do it again and have a second game, which is just great. But that'll be coming away in just about 40 minutes from now. So we do have to try and cram a lot of stuff into the time we have. And boy, what a lot of stuff has been going on. It's simply been amazing, hasn't it? This is why I hate doing fundraisers at this time of year, because everything is happening and we don't have enough time to talk back and forth with the audience because we're begging for money. But you know what? Tonight we're not begging for money. Tonight we can take your phone calls, and tonight I'd like to hear from you. That is, assuming any listeners are left. Phone number is 631-632-9872, and that spells WUSB, so 631-632-WUSB. We'll be talking about a couple of issues, some controversial, some not. Oh, yeah, they're all controversial. Who are we kidding? So, yeah, last week, of course, I was in Brazil, and so we aired the program from Quebec, which is just the way we do things here. I don't think there's going to be a program from Brazil because I don't recall recording anything when I was down there. But it was such a cool place. The second time I've been to São Paulo, and it's a really busy city, a lot of activity going on. And I got to see more of it this time. I got to see more of the boundaries of the city. The city is always growing. It's one of these entities that just continually expands. People just build houses and move a little bit further and further away, but it's still considered the city. And I got to actually see some of the country this time, which was rather nice. But São Paulo is not really designed for people to get around via mass transit, unfortunately, which makes it easy to segregate people, makes it hard to get from one place to another without a car of some sort. And when I got back here a few days ago, I was kind of struck with the same feeling, because there I was at Jamaica Station on the Long Island Railroad, and I had to wait 2 hours in the freezing cold, and it was freezing cold when I got back. I was very happy, because it's good to get freezing cold temperatures when you've been in the summer sun. Actually, it wasn't so bad in Brazil, but it was definitely warmer than it's supposed to be this time of year for us. But when I got back to Jamaica and was waiting for a train heading out to the island, I had to wait 2 hours for a train. 2 hours for a train going in that direction. Isn't that incredible? And I had to wait outside because, well, you can either wait in the overheated waiting room or you can wait out on the platform, and I chose the platform. And while I was there, I read through the newspaper, took my time, and I was reading about the transit hikes that are coming. They want to raise the fare of the trains. They want to cut back the number of trains. They want to make it as hard as possible for people to use mass transit around here. Meanwhile, gas prices are going down again. And I realize, you know, with a car, I can get back and forth from New York City at a fraction of the cost of and much more conveniently than if I use mass transit. It's not supposed to be that way. That's not how you encourage people to stop using cars. But it seems in this area, they really want you to use cars because they're making it so expensive, they're making it so inconvenient, and now the damn things are crashing all the time. Two Long Island Railroad accidents at the same station in a few days. In fact, I just missed the one at Jamaica Station that happened 2 days earlier. And then another one happened 2 days later. So I was right in the middle, and I didn't get to see anything. But nobody seriously hurt, fortunately. But tells you, the infrastructure is just crumbling. It's not being maintained, raising the rates, lessening the frequency, making it as inconvenient as possible. Yeah, you know what? Suddenly an SUV doesn't sound so bad, does it? Well, at least a smart car definitely doesn't sound so bad. So, yeah, those are my impressions coming back into this country. Otherwise, extremely smooth. I don't think I've ever gone through airport security as quickly as I did on the way out. They really wanted to see me out of this place. But basically, I was talking to somebody on the phone saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to go through security now. And usually that's a whole big thing, you know, where you have to be searched, or you have to wait on a long line, or somebody asks you a bunch of inconvenient questions. This time, it's just 1, 2, 3, you know? You put things on the little conveyor belt. I almost didn't even have to take off my shoes. On the way back from Brazil, they didn't want me to take off my shoes. They said, no, don't do that. But on the way out, people were sort of hesitant, and nobody really said to take off the shoes, but people did it anyway. But I have a feeling, soon we're not going to have to take off our shoes anymore. And that's kind of cool. But after that, after we did all that, taking off the belt, taking off the shoes, putting the thing on the conveyor belt, walk through, no beeps, nothing like that, here, take all your stuff, goodbye. The whole thing took about 45 seconds. It's never been that fast for me. And then on the way back, equally fast. Really incredible. And coming back into our country, you know, a few questions asked, but no detainment this time. It's almost like coming back here is a positive thing. And with the changing, the rebranding of America, that's right. America 2.0 is launching on January 20th. That's what's going to happen. Rebranding of the country. It just feels, for a little while anyway, I know until reality sets in, but for now it feels like things might actually start looking up. Now, you heard our show a couple of weeks ago where we were standing in the streets of New York City on November 4th, the day Barack Obama won, and just the incredible celebration that just spontaneously occurred throughout the city, and I imagine throughout the country as well. Haven't really gotten a whole lot of feedback from people listening to the show. People talk to me in person, but I haven't seen very many as far as other experiences people might have had in other parts of this country, other parts of other countries. I'd like to know, what was the reaction? Did you do anything? Were there any kind of outpourings of grief or happiness or what have you? Write to us, otw@2600.com. Also like to have feedback on last week's show. That was, of course, the Crossing the Bridge program. You know what? I kind of recorded that as a lark. Didn't really think that was ever going to make it to the air, but according to a few people, it never should have. But basically, sometimes crossing a bridge can be very dramatic, and believe me, it really was. I don't know if it was conveyed in quite the accurate way that it portrayed itself to me when it happened, but crossing this bridge, this wobbly bridge that actually sways when you walk across it, it's the Indiana Jones type of a thing that you run away from various monsters on, and it was very, very high up and very, very long over these very dramatic waterfalls, and nobody watching over you. Yeah, it was one of the most frightening events of my life, I think, and I'm glad I was able to share that last week. So if you've had experiences like that, any feedback on that particular experience, write to us again, otw@2600.com. Okay, Brazil, elections, what else? Well, of course, we had something happen here, which was simply unbelievable. It was shocking to say the least, and it was very, very close to us. And we haven't had a chance to talk about it, mostly because of the fundraiser, and because we weren't here a couple of weeks as well. I'd like to talk about that tonight. I'd like to have people call in and talk about that, because I know it's on people's minds. I know it's on people's minds. And I'm talking, of course, about the horrible killing that took place mere miles from this studio. Racially biased mob of people targeting Hispanics. And that seems to be the latest thing going on here in Long Island, here in Suffolk County. 7 Patchogue Medford High School students have been charged in the fatal attack on Marcelo Lucero, 37 years old. They face hate crime conspiracy counts. They're charged with conspiring to attack Lucero, and what prosecutors say was an unsuccessful attempt to surround and pummel another Hispanic man, Hector Sierra, earlier on November 8th. Now, there's all kinds of interesting aspects to this story. Basically, what happened here was that these 7, I can't say that word on the air, can I? But boy, these 7 individuals went out looking for Hispanics to attack. Not kidding. That's actually what goes on around here with certain people. Now, this one gem of a human being, his name is Jeffrey Conroy, 17 years old, Medford. Medford's just right around the block from here. Has been arraigned on a charge of... actually, you know what? I think I'm reading this before it actually happened. I know he was being considered for second-degree murder as a hate crime. I'm not sure if that's what he actually was charged with. But he was charged with a pretty serious a crime as you can be charged with. And I don't think anyone's ever been charged with that as a hate crime before. First time in Long Island anyone has faced that kind of a charge. And, that is what he was charged with. Okay, second-degree murder is a hate crime, along with the original charge. This is the original charge that he was facing. First-degree manslaughter is a hate crime, so it was upgraded. This whole story has gotten... The island, the county, the whole neighborhood in a state of shock, because you don't think it will happen right around here. Well, actually, you know what? I did think it would happen, because it's not the first time things like this have happened around here. Not the first time at all. Now, let's listen to what some of the defenses are here. William Cajon Alandia, he's an attorney, and he's representing... the guy who actually stabbed Marcelo Lucero. Now remember, seven people attacked this guy. One person stabbed him. And the defense of some of the other 6 is that, they didn't know that he was going to get stabbed. They just thought they were going to beat the crap out of him because he was Hispanic. It's amazing to read the defenses that people come up with. But in this particular case, the lawyer for this guy, the main guy, the guy that actually stabbed him to death, says, I find it outrageous. He said his client was innocent. He lashed out at county officials, who he said had unfairly and publicly condemned his client in recent days, in particular lashing out at County Executive Steve Levy, saying, I find it outrageous that a man with a law degree holding the position of county executive can from day one brand my client a racist, white supremacist, without any personal knowledge of the proof in this case. The only proof of racism and white supremacism are the words and deeds of Mr. Levy, who for the past 3 years has very clearly spoken and acted as a racist. Fascinating, fascinating turn of events here. The lawyer for the guy attacking an Hispanic person, because he's Hispanic, is attacking the county executive for being a racist. Weird line of defense here. I mean, basically... you'd think that they'd be kind of more aligned than that. If you look at some of the things that the county executive has said, and if you look at the deeds of this guy's client, not saying one necessarily leads to the other, but they're not so far apart. And we'll get into that in a second. Now, of course, the county executive is a bit perturbed by that, and I think he's a little scared, too, because of some of the things he's done over the last few years. He said in a statement, "It's reprehensible for anyone to suggest that individuals opposed to illegal immigration are necessarily intolerant or culpable in this outrageous act of hate." Although Levy noted the suspects are presumed innocent, he added, "I think it is fair to say that an individual who tattoos a swastika on his body can be classified as a white supremacist," referring to police reports of a tattoo on Conroy's leg. Now, outside the court, Suffolk County District Attorney Thomas Spoda said the seven charged in the attack admitted they regularly beat Hispanics for fun. He said one of the accused attackers, Anthony Hartford, 17 years old, also of Medford, told police, "I don't go out doing this very often, maybe once a week." According to the district attorney, that statement provides a true window into the mindset of these defendants. To them, it was a sport. Of course, his lawyer says that words were put in his mouth. Not quite sure how they got there. But this is brilliant. This guy, Lawrence Silverman, the lawyer for Anthony Hartford, says his client has Hispanic ancestors and absolutely denies he is a bigot. Basically saying that because he's Hispanic, he can't possibly be racist or attack other Hispanics. Remember, Hitler had Jewish blood in him. Yeah, and there's black-on-black violence constantly. There's self-loathing Jews. There's all kinds of people that attack their own. It's got nothing to do with what your racial composition is. You can be just as hateful and just as ignorant as any other race. One of the lawyers says, "I think the district attorney's office is taking a bunch of unsolved bias crimes from the area that involve teenagers, and they're just throwing it at these kids." Well, that may be so. I have a feeling there's a whole lot more out there. There's probably lots of gangs of people doing things like this, or thinking of doing things like this, or trying to defend these people. Now, early in the morning, the same day, November 8th, Marlon Garcia was smoking on his front porch in Patchogue when he noticed a fight in a parking lot across the street. As he moved closer, he said he saw it was two white teens punching a Hispanic man, and he yelled for them to stop. When the assailants turned to look at Garcia, the victim fled towards South Ocean Avenue. The attackers fired shots at Garcia from what sounded like a small caliber weapon. When the aggressors came within 6 feet of him, shouting expletives, Garcia said he screamed out to his brother-in-law, who was also on the porch. The pair of teens fled down Taylor Lane. Within seconds, he said, a red blazer drove past and a passenger shot at him. Garcia ran to the porch, grabbed two glass bottles to defend themselves, and returned. The SUV accelerated down the street, doubled back, and an occupant fired again. "I covered my face and they hit me in the torso and right thigh," said 27-year-old Garcia. The attack took place less than 24 hours before Marcelo Lucero was killed, the victim of what police said was a gang assault by seven youths, one of whom has been charged with second-degree murder. Suffolk police charged two of the six, Jordan Dash and Nicholas Hausch, in the attack against Garcia and two other Hispanics, all in Patchogue. Now, these two were also involved in the other attack, from what I'm reading. And the amazing thing is that Garcia says, or Garcia's sister says that her brother showed the cops the gunshot wounds. "I told police I wanted to press charges. They said they were going to put it down as a disturbance because they didn't find the BB gun." So now internal affairs of the police department is handling that particular foul-up, because had they arrested these guys, maybe the other attack wouldn't have happened afterwards. Now there's a shake-up in the Suffolk County Police. And to deal with this matter, what have they done? They've promoted an Hispanic man to be the highest-ranking officer, the head of the 5th Precinct. That's the way that they deal with this. Commissioner Richard Dormer called Inspector Aristide Mojica an experienced, seasoned officer, said he made his decision based on the seriousness of the incidents that have occurred in Patchogue. "We want to reestablish communication between the community, the department, and the commissioner's office." The shakeup also includes lateral transfers for 6th Precinct Deputy Inspector Jan Rios, who will be second. We don't really care where they're going, but basically a whole lot of people got moved around. These moves come more than 2 weeks after the November 8th killing of Marcelo Lucero, who was a native of Ecuador, by the way. Police said was stabbed to death after he was attacked by 7 teenagers because of his ethnicity. The young men charged in that attack, all of whom attended Patchogue Medford High School, are also linked to at least 2 other attacks on Latino men in Patchogue earlier that day. 2 of them were connected to an attack on an Hispanic man who was shot with a BB gun. We just mentioned that case. The victim in the earlier attack, Marlon Garcia, said the pair were let go by police, leaving them free to take part in the fatal attack on Lucero. That incident is being investigated by the department's Internal Affairs Bureau. The reaction to this move by the police department is not entirely positive. Fernando Mateo, president of Hispanics Across America, said he doubted whether the transfers would solve any problems. This is a joke, he said, adding he's never heard of Mujica, wondered whether he was a token appointment. I don't think it's the color or ethnic background of the person that's going to change the policies that have been going on in Suffolk County for years. It's about leadership and who's going to work hard to correct this problem. Unbelievable. All right, now we get to the county executive and whether or not he has blood on his hands. He said about a week or so ago that he was wrong to refer to this hate crime killing of the Ecuadorian man as a one-day story and to argue that the slaying received undue attention because of his immigration policies. It was absolutely the wrong time for me to suggest that coverage of events in Suffolk is treated differently by the media, Stephen Levy said in a letter to Newsday. The horrible incident is indeed more than a one-day story. It was a reminder of how far we as a society still have to go. Well, somebody got to you, didn't they? Yeah. The letter came 2 days after Levy said the Patchogue stabbing death of Marcelo Lucero by 7 teenage boys who police said were looking to harm an Hispanic man would be a one-day story had it occurred in Nassau County. In an interview and in prepared statements, he argued that there is no nexus between his anti-illegal immigration policies and Lucero's death. Since taking office in 2004, Levy has fought for and signed legislation to bar undocumented immigrants from working for county contractors and county licensees. He also invited federal immigration officials to the county jail and has had harsh relations with Long Island immigrant activists. This is, by all reports, the first time he's ever admitted making a mistake. According to the pastor of the Brookville Reformed Church, Reverend Alan Ramirez, who previously had said that Levy has blood on his hands, said he's optimistic about the letter. It demonstrates a good first step. Hopefully he has the wisdom to know that in order for there to be some degree of forgiveness, there has to be a recognition of some degree of responsibility. But not every Levy critic was so kind. Patrick Young, the program director of the Central American Refugee Center in Hempstead, said if Levy truly regretted his words, he would have retracted them sooner. What we're seeing here is someone who is the executive of a county facing a grave moral crisis who sees it primarily as exercise in spin control. So this guy is clearly running scared. Don't worry, you guys are set. It's okay. The sports people are here. 15 minutes, you guys are on. Don't worry. Yeah. So anyway, Stephen Levy basically has been saying a lot of things over the years, and I'd like to point to one of them. This comes from 2006, when Suffolk County okayed a worker bill. Actually, you know what? I'm going to hop into delay, just so that we can start taking phone calls because we don't have very much time, and I'd like to squeeze in as much as we possibly can in the short amount of time that we have. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Willie Nelson step in for a second and help us get into delay. I'm going to throw the right knobs, the right switches, and make sure that nothing goes wrong this time. And hopefully everything will turn out properly, and we'll see you on the other side in just a moment.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. You're listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
Here we are. Almost messed it up yet again, but I think we made it. I think we made it okay, didn't we? Are we okay? All right, we're in delay. Good. Our phone number is 631-632-9872, and I request anybody in the studio, please don't pick up the phone until we get to it here on the air. That way people don't have to pay for phone calls until we start talking to them. Basically, this is from 2006. The Suffolk legislature overwhelmingly approved County Executive Steve Levy's controversial immigration workers bill, despite widespread acknowledgement by lawmakers that the measure will have little impact on the problems tied to undocumented workers and already has increased racial tensions. That happened 2 years ago. Now, I'd like to read you something from the New York Times, a comment about this particular bill that was passed and why it was seen as not a good thing. Stephen Levy is utterly correct to deplore the federal government's dithering refusal to restore the rule of law on immigration, but his solution, cracking the whip on local employers, is a small-bore idea, a nuisance intended to put out the unwelcome mat to the newcomers who are trying to make their way in Suffolk. It is vigilante governance, a one-note policy fueled by resentment and indignation, which can be dangerous in a county as prone to outbreaks of anti-immigrant hatred as Suffolk. Yeah, 2 years ago! The writing was on the wall. It was pretty obvious that such things simply were not needed on this level. I'd like to read you a little bit from this blog that appeared a couple of years ago, the DMI blog, Politics, Policy, and the American Dream, written by Amy Taylor. Steve Levy has a lot of complaints about immigrants that we've all heard before. His latest complaint comes in the form of legislation designed to require any company or agency doing business with the county to verify that their employees are authorized to work in the United States. He says this will prevent contractors from relying on immigrant workers who will accept low wages, allowing them to outbid those who, quote-unquote, play by the rules. He is right that many contractors deny minimum wage and overtime payments to their workers in order to have the lowest bid. They also all too often fail to pay unemployment insurance and workers' compensation, allowing them to take in more profit. But he has got the solution backwards. Federal law already requires employers to verify the work authorization of their employees, yet undocumented workers continue to be hired and cheated out of fair wages. As long as there is an exploitable class of workers, they will be exploited. This issue is intricately connected to one of Levy's pet peeves, overcrowded housing of immigrants in Suffolk County. In response to this problem, last summer, Levy joined forces with the town of Brookhaven to evict the residents. In a recent conversation on WNBC between Steve Levy and Pat Young of the Long Island Immigrant Alliance, Mr. Levy mentioned at least six times that illegal immigrants are living 60 people to a 900-square-foot house. Why does he think they were living like that? And anyway, how would stronger employer sanctions and evictions end this type of arrangement? Where does he think the residents will go? Many of them will end up homeless. Others will find another place to live until they are evicted again. His argument here does not address the root cause of either problem. Poor immigrant workers live 60 people in one house because they can't afford to live in better conditions. They are forced to share cramped housing because they are exploited out of minimum wage and overtime protections despite legal requirements. How can the situation be improved? Well, the real problem in both of these situations lies in the fact that undocumented workers are at the mercy of their employers because they face the threat of deportation when they enforce their workplace rights. And as a result, these employers may prefer immigrant workers to U.S.-born workers because they can underpay them, creating the very problem Levy mentions, the underbidding of employers who play by the rules. The solution lies in the creation of real worker protections for everyone in the workplace. Both U.S.-born and immigrant workers will benefit from the elimination of a two-tiered system, with undocumented immigrants coerced into accepting meager wages out of fear. An immigration policy that enables undocumented workers to continue living and working in the United States while ensuring that all immigrants are able to exercise full rights in the workplace would more effectively address Mr. Levy's concerns. This type of policy would in turn raise wages and working conditions for all workers, including the native-born. Without an exploitable and silent class of workers, all workers would earn better wages and be on an even playing field. Cheating contractors would no longer have a cheap pool of labor to allow them to underbid law-abiding contractors. However, this would not be because these workers simply disappeared. With a less precarious status, immigrant workers would be empowered to enforce their workplace rights. They would still be available to fill the jobs that need them, and wages would not be pushed down as a result of competition for the lowest wage. And don't worry, Mr. Levy, with better wages, immigrant residents of Suffolk County would surely move into less crowded housing. Levy's legislation has also been criticized for demonizing immigrants through deputizing local government to enforce federal law, but only some federal law. He defended his legislation by saying the federal government obviously is not enforcing federal law. And why do we have to do that? To make sure that these businesses that try to play by the rules in Suffolk County are not put at a competitive disadvantage. And to that, Mr. Young countered, you can violate federal tax law and still be a contractor with Suffolk County. It's only if you have problems with the immigration laws that you can be disqualified. Then he explained the dangers of discrimination that may result from such legislation. It demonizes immigrants, and a lot of employers, rather than taking the risk of losing county contracts for the rest of their lives, will instead simply play it safe and not hire anyone who's brown or comes from Asia or anyone who has an accent. Now, as we mentioned, the New York Times called Levy's approach vigilante governance, a one-note policy fueled by resentment and indignation, which can be dangerous in a county prone to anti-immigrant outbreaks. Newsday criticized his response and said that forcing immigrants into the woods is no solution. Levy calls the media out of touch on this issue. Who exactly is out of touch? Yeah. So here's the thing. The reason that he has blood on his hands in this particular case is because he has set a tone in this county where the immigrants are the problem. The quote-unquote illegal immigrants are the problem everywhere. I think the problem is roving gangs of hooligans that are out to beat people black and blue and kill them occasionally just because they're suspected of being illegal immigrants. That is far worse than having anyone, any number of undocumented workers. And by the way, these undocumented workers are out there cleaning your car, cutting your grass, fixing your house in all sorts of different ways, cleaning the insides of your homes, all kinds of things that people around here, regular contractors, do not do. So it's no secret that this kind of a thing is prevalent. So the main reason is that Well, let's take some phone calls. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello.
How you doing?
Great, how's it going? Yeah, I've been tuning into your show all evening.
Where are you calling from?
Brookhaven.
Okay, great.
Is it horrendous, but it's just another example of, you know, the only way things are going to ever change is when, you know, something horrible happens, and, you know, then people start getting up in arms, and, you know, they can't sweep it under the mat anymore, you know, the carpet, because it finally is a front page issue when, you know, we consume ourselves with so many frivolous things on a day-to-day basis and, you know, don't pay attention to what's going on right in our communities until, like, a tragedy like this happens. And now, you know, people are getting all up in arms when, you know, This is an unfortunate reality that we live in.
So what do you think the best way to address this is?
It starts. People, like you just said, and, you know, if you're a hard-working person, you're a good person in my eyes, so I think we need to separate, you know, the good from the bad and realize the good positive values.
All right. Listen, sir, thanks. Thanks for your comments.
Hi, man.
All right, take care. And I want to apologize for listeners for the disruption in the show. Sports people are a little bit too eager, and they unplug some things and cause some problems. Please give us a call, 631-632-9872. Can't believe this nonsense I got to deal with around here. So it's really It's really distracting, for one thing. There are all kinds of editorials running about this throughout the world, actually. And one thing that that ran in Newsday, which I'd like to touch upon. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. I promise if you call in, you won't get cut off this time. Here's an editorial that ran in Newsday shortly after this happened. Late Saturday, a man was fatally stabbed near the train station in Patchogue, reportedly because the seven local teenagers who assaulted him wanted a victim who looked Latino. Marcelo Lucero was at the wrong place at the wrong time, and he was apparently the wrong color. Police have deemed the assault a hate crime. Jeffrey Conroy is charged with manslaughter. I'm just going to take this phone call. We'll continue this editorial in a bit. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, why are you defending these guys?
I'm sorry?
I mean, don't we have to have borders, language, and culture?
What's your question?
I say, why are you defending these guys? Don't we have to have language, border, and culture? I mean...
Defending which guys?
You know? You're defending me. I mean, it's a little...
Wait, who's defending who? I'm not following you at all.
I've just been listening to your show, right?
Right.
And you know, don't you realize that this is modern-day slavery? Don't you realize we're taking advantage of these guys?
What? You think I'm defending the people that killed the guy?
No, you're defending, like, the fact that we're allowing people to run around the country undocumented.
Okay, well, first of all... The fact that people are undocumented in this country is nothing new. That happens all the time. It happens in lots of countries. What's outrageous is when we have such a feeling of resentment towards these people that they're fair game as far as being victimized. Simply because somebody is Hispanic, they get attacked or killed. And I think the overall feeling here is that they're the problem. I don't think they're the problem at all.
The problem is the employers allowing, the government's allowing this to go on.
Well, the employers are victimizing these people for sure. They're the ones being able to pay slave wages. There's no question about that.
But our hands are dirty with that too. I mean, it's driving our economy, right?
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is, if you create an atmosphere where these people are looked upon as the enemy, as somebody who's stealing your job or making your life miserable, which is not the case at all. If anything, they're making things better. Then we cannot be surprised when things like this happen, and we have to take some responsibility for our words. If we're going to make this atmosphere of hatred and suspicion, can't be surprised when people start acting with weapons and ignorance. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, like we're all part of the problem too. I mean, I've been all over Long Island riding my bike around, and all these guys are all mowing lawns and getting paid under the table, and you know,
I agree.
All
yeah,
these liberals, they're just as guilty as the conservative guys.
Right. Well, you know, I've had experience with contractors who don't hire undocumented aliens or whatever you want to call them, and they are the most incompetent people. They never show up when they're supposed to show up. You know, it's I used somebody last time who swore they were never going to use illegal aliens, and now I say to myself, I'm only going to use people that will actually show up. I'll pay them the same amount, but the people who are not undocumented simply are not doing the job. So that's why there's a need for more people. It's absurd, but if these people are going to be here, they should be treated fairly. That means being paid a fair wage. That means getting unemployment. That means getting health insurance. That means not being attacked.
Yeah, but then there'll be no need for them if we're going to pay them fairly, right?
Well, I don't know.
The best thing I heard from a contractor was when one of these undocumented guys falls off the roof, they just bury him in the backyard.
Yeah, of course, and that shows you who the real victim is here. We are not the victims. We're not the victims. Our lawns are being cut. Our houses are being cleaned. We're not the ones being buried somewhere or losing an arm someplace.
But we're taking advantage of it.
Well, yes, but how do you avoid that? You have to change the entire system.
But I don't know. I think you got a good show, but the Trump everything. This is $7.4 billion bailout. I mean, I don't think anything.
Well, okay,
else
you're moving into something else with bailouts. We'll have to talk about that maybe in future.
Yeah, you got to talk
shows.
About that. You got a great show. I'll tune
Thanks.
In when you talk about that because, I mean, I'm concerned about the illegal aliens, but the $7.4 billion bailout is beyond everything. I mean, it's going to just hamper and Obama's.
I agree. I completely agree. Listen, sir, we're going to have to go.
Yeah, great. We'll tune into your show again. I'm up here in New Haven. I'll listen to you on the internet.
Oh, great. All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear from you. Thanks for calling. And we're going to move out of delay now. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, I would like to spend more time on this, obviously, and I would like to have my head together a little bit more, but it's very hard with all the distractions going on around here. Next week, we're going to focus some attention on this, and we're going to lock the door as well. So until then, write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll be happy to... read your letters on the air and things like that. Stay tuned for basketball, whatever coming up. And Steinberg's going to get their asses kicked.
Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, pero esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un dolor que no me deja respirar. Llevo en el cuerpo una condena que siempre me echa a caminar. Me dicen el desaparecido, que cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido. Me dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, pero esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un motor que nunca deja de rolar. Llevo en el alma un camino destinado a nunca llegar. Cuando me buscan nunca estoy, cuando me encuentran yo no soy el que está enfrente, porque ya me fui corriendo más allá. Me dicen el desaparecido, cuando llega ya se ha ido. Volando vengo, volando voy, deprisa, deprisa, rumbo perdido, perdido en el siglo, perdido en el siglo. Siglo XX. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo rumbo al 21? ¿Cuándo llegaré? Me llaman el desaparecido. ¿Cuándo llegaré? Perdido en el siglo. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? Me llaman el desaparecido. ¿Cuándo llegaré? ¿Cuándo llegaré? Dicen el desaparecido, fantasma que nunca está. Me dicen el desagradecido, esa no es la verdad. Yo llevo en el cuerpo un motor que nunca deja de rolar. Llevo en el alma un camino destinado a nunca llegar. Me llaman el desaparecido, que cuando llega ya está.